if I was to, I really struggle to be bound by a watch because I'm always looking at it. I love numbers, and if they're there on my wrist, I look at them and I analyse them, and I should be running this pace, or I've done this before at this time, and it just kind of absorbs all my attention and focus, and I just don't enjoy when I'm out there. So actually I made a conscious decision last year to just get rid of the watch, and it's been so much better ever since.
Kia ora tato, that was Ian Evans. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
This is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. New year.
Yes, you know what that means.
Same us.
Yeah, but you know what it
same
means.
Same wild things.
Yeah, but you know what it means.
New wild things code.
Yeah, and this is going to be quite hard to explain because the old code was DCR 2020.
That's okay? The old code.
That's the old code. Don't use that.
I had to email Mel about four times about this.
The new code. Mm-hmm. Do you know what it is? You got a pen?
Yeah.
DCR 2021.
Do that again.
DCR 2021. I'm not quite sure how they've figured it out, but that's the code that you use. So you can use it to get 15 months VIP membership of Wild Things for the price of 12.
Yes.
Plus, they give us a little bit of...
They do? They give us a bit of a scratch and tickle?
You're happy because you get the Wild Things VIP membership.
You get access to their store, which is actually really good and actually has really good... discounts on lots of really good stuff.
Lots of really good products, yep. They're happy because they get an extra VIP member, and we're happy because we get a bit of...
Yeah, from Mel and Sal. So if you go to the website, which is...
wildthings.club.
And enter the code DCR2021, you get 15 months for the price of 12.
You're in the money.
You're in the money for new year, new you, same us.
Yeah, DCR2021. Mm. Don't forget it. It's quite hard to remember.
Speaking of new things, I'm still treating as new the Kinabalu Ultra RC from Scott Running that I ran Kepler in.
Yes.
And came out of that, I was going to say scot-free. But I fell over and really hurt myself. But that was my fault, not the shoes. But they're still going strong as after a summer of quite hectic use. The Kinabalu Ultra RC from Scott Running is a fantastic shoe. And if you go to scottrunning.nz, because he's got new stock, because the boat came in.
Fantastic. The boat came in.
The boat came in, or however it got here. I'm not sure if it was either a boat or an airplane, but it got here.
Pigeon drop.
We've been a lot of pigeons.
Mm. But they're here.
They're here. You go to Scott Running.
Tearing up trails near you.
.nz.
Mm. Further faster.
What do you say about Further Faster?
Well,
did you hear that Rocky from Further Faster got accused of being in a gang?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he did.
Maybe it's due to the fact that he walks around like an extra from Sons of Anarchy, really. He's got the mullet,
his mullet,
the beard, and the bandana. Yeah.
And then what really set it off?
Was the fetching new Dirt Church Radio t-shirts with the panther. The Vigilance Panther on the back.
Yeah.
Accused of being in a gang, but the only gang he is in is, I guess he'd be in the Montane gang. Dirt Church gang.
The Dirt Church gang. It's a cool gang.
It's a cool gang. Yeah. DCR. That's right. Anyway, so if you go to furtherfaster.co.nz, which is the best independently owned outdoors retailer in the country, you can check out all the amazing stuff that they've got. Montane gear, they've got kayaks, they've got... Do you know what I really want for 2021? My new resolution?
No.
It's a jet boil.
What's that?
You go and find out.
All right.
I want a jet boil.
Which website do I go to?
And just type in jet boil, but furtherfaster.co.nz would be the one that you'd go to for a jet boil.
All right.
That's not... Well, I don't have a jet boil. I'm not angling for a jet boil. I just really want one.
You know what I've been thrashing? It's my little cup thing.
Yes. I use it every day.
Mm.
Every day. So we use the Life Adventure keep cups, thermos. And they keep things hot, but they keep things very cold too. It's been useful in this weather. So we should probably play the jingle and let the people get on with the podcast.
It goes something like Further Faster, they're in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Oh, Further Faster, they're in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to Further Faster now.
Dirt Church Radio.
Much like Ian Evans, I take visual cues off my surroundings, so that's why I got completely lost recording the intro without it being written down.
Anyway, yes, 127. We've had 127 episodes.
127 episodes, and
we still need to read stuff off screen sometimes, don't we? But we've made it.
We've made it, and we have a fantastic conversation for you this week with the utterly delightful, utterly inspiring, utterly refreshing Ian Evans.
Mm.
So good.
So good, and so much to that conversation.
Absolutely. So
anyway, we'll come to that.
But Ian Evans, Revenant, Victor, Famous Five at Relapse, Wanaka lover, mower of lawns,
Birmingham born,
father to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just fantastic.
Man in the mountains.
This is a conversation where you listen to it and you go, and as we were talking, I was thinking, I wish I could take some of his courage forward in terms of that trusting oneself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
Right. I had a couple of weird moments in the forest this weekend.
Yes.
I found a random Vibram soul.
Now,
thanks Air Force. Air Force is just buzzing us. But I put it on my Instagram if anyone wants to have a look. But I came across, there was just a soul. It made me think, what happened there? Do you ever come across, there's lots of weird stuff in Riverhead, isn't there?
I've come across lots of empty alcohol packets, pornography, oddly enough, 9mm pistol shell casings.
Yes.
There was a lowered blue BMW that passed me at very low speed, like right out the back one night, which wasn't very fun.
Pigs, deers,
feral cats. Can add that to the list.
What?
Yep, feral cats. Yep.
Where?
Confirmed. Riverhead.
When?
They were cat-sized. They weren't like giant cat-sized.
Okay, so we're not talking lion-sized.
But they were something that I'd never seen. But something that I'd never seen before. Yeah.
Huh. The other thing that I found, I was running with our friend Reese, and I had my Ultra Spire pack vest.
Yes.
You know. How long have we had those new Zygoses for?
This is a couple of years.
Yep. So he's. Grant. I had my phone in my shorts thing.
Yes.
And I took it out and it was all wet and sweaty. And he went, oh, that's why I use the pocket in my Ultra Spire vest. And I went, you what? He said, yeah, the phone pocket in the vest. And I said, what phone pocket? And sure enough, there's a little pocket where you put your phone and it keeps dry.
Yeah, it's above the...
Why didn't you tell me about this?
I assumed you knew.
No.
That's where I keep my phone when I'm running.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, if you're rocking two bottles, you can't use it, but yeah.
I did, but I never even knew it was there.
Maybe I don't
didn't even know about
there.
The little flap thing either.
Okay.
It's got a little flap. Wow. Anyway. The things you find out. Anyway, it was a lovely... pleasant run. It was a little bit moist, and so then I quenched my thirst with something to drink afterwards.
Right. I feel like we're going on a journey here.
That was a special for Andrew McDowell.
Why?
Because I wrote that I had a pleasant run, and he messaged me on Strava saying, the word pleasant is a little like the words moist and quench, and that I get a little twitch in my eye each time I hear it. I suggested to him that's something maybe he shouldn't have said to somebody who produces a podcast that he listens to.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was special for him. Look, lessons last week as well.
We've had such a lot of fantastic feedback from the episode that we did with Dr. Tom Reynolds, and it was really nice to engage with the community as a whole when people were freaking out a little bit, starting to ask all those questions. I've had some really lovely feedback from people who discovered the show through the Tarawera page, and now one gentleman, he was really sweet, he was like, do you have any episodes when people talk about the dark places that they go to when they run? Like, bro, just... Chuck a data today, like,
yeah,
it's
it was great.
Was amazing, and he really, I think he hit the nail on the head in that he was succinct, he was grounded, he was reasonable and rational.
I think being able to boil it down to those five
absolutely
things as
absolutely.
Well made it sort of, you know, usable advice, wasn't it? It's not sort of like just a lecture. It was five simple things that we can all do. If you haven't listened to it, go back and have a listen. You know, whatever races you're planning, whatever distance you're planning, there's something there for you to learn. Yep. And even just in training as well, but keeping yourself safe and getting back so you can run again.
And I will iterate and I will reiterate for those listening now, time check, we're recording on Monday evening as we do, you know, and there's a lot of stuff on the news and COVID's reared its head again, and I'm sure that there's a lot of you out there going, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to get to Tarawera, or oh, what if Old Ghost, or what if this, what if that, what if this, what if that. Not to sound too flossy, or just breathe through it.
Yep.
Okay, keep doing what you're doing, keep training like you're training, keep washing your hands, keep using the Tracer app, just keep on focused on what's in front of you, and it'll what will happen will happen. As hard as that may sound, it's the way to go. Otherwise, you'll drive yourself to sixes and sevens, and it won't be very cool.
Yeah, yeah. You had a pretty cool weekend.
I took Dr. Reynolds' advice and got a stat dose of Mimifongata. It was just, it was literally heaven. And Ian talks about, you know, how you're either mountain-born or you're coastal-born. And I think I've discovered that I'm very much, I have an affinity for coastlines, and because we live on the coast, I live on the coast, Eugene lives on the coast, and most of our running is coastal. It's just, it was heaven. I mean, I sent you those videos, you know.
Oh, it looked amazing.
For some reason, I've come up in a rash. I don't know what it is. The doctor, but like, I've never had a rash before. It's not measles, it's not anything else, but this rash, and I was feeling really down.
This is before you went away.
This is before I went away. It's Friday. Catch it up, yeah. And turns out that the rash was just one of those things, but I went out running and had a great weekend, and actually for the first time felt like I was sort of nailing training. So it was win-win-win. Yeah, and I discovered too that, you know, I know I'm very much a creature of habit, and then I'm very lucky to live in Riverhead, but I've thought heaps about where I run, and the change of scenery was good mentally as it was physically. So
yeah, that's something for me to take, can't it?
Yeah. Going forward,
I've had a couple of runs last couple of weekends in the Waitakere Ranges and out at the West Coast, and that's been good to change it up a little bit. It is good to do that, because sometimes you sort of get into the routine, isn't it, of going to those.
Absolutely.
I know I've got, especially when you've got sort of a condensed time.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I know I can go there and I can drive there and it'll take that long and then I'll be back and everyone will be happy. But yeah, you do need to mix it up, don't you?
Again, germane to what Ian talks about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything that you would like to share with the group, Eugene Bingham?
Yeah. Well, I'm good. I must admit, I am feeling a little bit of FOMO about not running at Tarawera.
Is there anything you'd like to share with the group about what you'll be doing?
Oh, yeah. I'll be doing a little bit of helping out these professional MCs. I'll be doing a little bit of helping out with the amateur hour. But on Saturday afternoon before I head off to Pace Gene, which I'm really, you know, I'm so looking forward to doing that and being part of that race in that different way. I'm excited about, you know, looking at all the people, everyone's getting in those final big runs for events like Tarawera, like Old Ghost and
just
and
had Ultra Easy.
Ultra Easy. Yeah, it's great watching everyone's training, but man, yeah, it's been a little bit of, you know. I'm good. I'm loving the beauty of kind of just slowly building up without a race right around the corner.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I think one of the main things that I've discovered is we've said it before, I like training probably more than I like racing. Right.
Hey, we've got some merch we can shift.
Shirts. We are now officially, we've sold out of men's large.
Yep.
We've still got some medium, small, and we've got a full range, and some XL in the gents. We've got a full range of women's sizes.
Yep.
So if you'd like to get in touch, $39.95 plus.
As worn by Ian Evans.
As worn by Ian Evans. Of
Revenant. I did see that he was
fantastic.
Yeah.
And apologies to those, there's been a delay in answering some of your emails. I've got to them now. By the time I get out, it's all sorted. Cool. So.
That's good. Very good, very good. Right. Yeah. Brooke Thomas.
Yeah, take a bow, Brooke.
Wow.
So she's,
amazing.
Yeah, smashed the fastest known time on Te Araroa. So Lucy Clark's record stood for about a year, but it was taken by Brooke on Friday night. 57 days, 12 hours and 7 minutes. And she raised $22,000 for Heart Kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's as of Sunday, so it's probably gone up by now, hopefully. You know, because she just did such an impressive job. And We can't wait to get her on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. So, you know, Te Araroa is 3,000 kilometres the length of the country, and, you know, she, you know, her backstory is amazing, where she was competing for New Zealand as a rower, and then at 22, doctors discovered that she'd been born with a heart condition, and she had to have a pacemaker inserted. But yeah, that hasn't stopped her from pulling off this incredible feat. So inspirational and well done. Absolutely remarkable. And yeah, tons of good stories to share, I am sure.
Amazing. Mm. It's just, oh my God. It's just so, people are incredible critters. You know, people are incredible. And I just can't, you know, speak to, again, the current, you know, this woman's a nurse as well. Fantastic. Just killing it. Yeah, there's other people that do it. People seem to be, you know, taking life by the horns as well. Andrew Robinson is setting out. He is currently attempting to do the 10 great walks in New Zealand in 10 days. Whew. So he reached out to us just before he set off. And, you know, like, it's hard sometimes to catch up with people, and we both have gig jobs and gigs. I've got a gig working full time.
The banjo gig.
Santa banjo gig has really taken off. I can play two chords.
Yeah, but Andrew's heading off. He's into it.
Yeah, he's had some setbacks and trials and travails with weather and stuff, but we will check in and report back.
And what is it? He's Hardy_Kiwi on Instagram, if you want to follow along. He posts, he's been posting along his journey, but yeah. Woo, amazing. Amazing.
Terry Davis is a liar. He's got a race called the Ultra Easy, and it isn't.
Yeah.
104K.
There's a thing in with the Commerce Commission right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You're going down, David.
Did you see there was pictures of snow during the week?
Yes.
But then race day comes along and it sounded super hot.
Boiling hot. Yeah. That's the Lugget Plain.
Yeah. And it starts at 3 a.m.?
Yep, absolutely. I remember Nick Johnson telling me about it when he was ripping the legs off me one time. But yeah, 104K, there's a marathon event as well.
Yeah.
And 4,000 something metres of vertical elevation. Incredible. In the women's race, 104K, Rachel Bridgewater was first in 1603.27, then Chantal Whitby in 1623.04, and Grace Dowling in 1652.09.
And there we go. Shout out to Claire Fox.
Claire Fox, fourth overall, first vet. Claire. Good work.
And in the men's, Ben Cullen, 12:23.40. Nicholas Verniest, 12:31 flat. And Croydon Patton, 14:57.49.
Fantastic. And Barrett Hocking took the fifth too. Amazing, bro. Well done. Yep.
In the marathon.
So it was Helene Barron in 4:17.24, Rachel Tucker in 4:23.36, and Virginia Pyle in 4:38.05.
And the men, Dean Stewart, 3:47.56, Steve Pemberton, 3:57.26, and Andreas Hirksey, 3:58.15. Hey, the other thing I wanted to mention too, it's not particularly trail, but
It's running, man.
It's running. Nick Willis, 19 years of running a sub 4-minute mile.
Just let that sink in.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'd just like to report that I've had 4 years of running a 19-minute mile, so suck on that. It's not quite the same, but
Yeah, so the flying Kiwi.
He's amazing.
You know, so John Walker, the other, you know, remarkable Kiwi who just kept going and going and had that tenacity, you know, he did 18 years, and now Nick has gone one better with 19 years. Man.
Next time you're running 1.6 kilometres, let that sink in.
Yeah.
How fast you have to be to run 4-minute miles. Speaking of fast people, Jim Walmsley, you might have heard of him, 12 seconds off the world 100-kilometre record, and he claimed the American record in an event set up by Hoka Oni Oni. Incredible.
Yeah. So he missed out on the record by 12 seconds, and so he ran 6:09.26.
Just repeat that again.
6:09.26. It was in Arizona. So 6:09:14 was the target. And he was on pace through 95 kilometres. But I don't know if you saw the video, so we're streaming it. He was constantly looking at his watch.
Yeah.
Like somebody at parkrun trying to hit 20, sub 20.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that cost him. I don't know. But he obviously knew that he was just slightly slipping behind. And so he ended up 12 seconds.
I think banging into that sign probably.
Probably. It didn't help. Yeah. It didn't help. He had a bit of a gash on his shoulder. So that's 3:42 a kilometre for 100 Ks.
5:57 per mile for 62 miles. You think about it, and one of the things that I love most about Jim Walmsley is the fact that his, I mean, I'm not going to say I don't rejoice in it. It would have been so amazing to see him set it, and the fact that he ran 6:09:14. 6:09:14 for 100 kilometres.
Is the world record. And did you see that? It was
an 11-kilometre.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
6:09:26, sorry. Yeah, he did not set the world record. But you see the did you see the course?
11-kilometre circuit, yeah.
Yeah, it was all back and forth and in and out and round about and round the houses. It wasn't like he's running around a straight track. And he hit a sign. You know, he's turned the wrong way. He ran into a bear that time. He just seems to have things happen.
Yeah,
he in kinda, his races.
Yeah, he loves a bit of adversity, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Mm. Goodness me. Mm. In the women's race, France's Audrey Tanguy, she claimed victory in 7:40:36, and Camille Herron pulled out with a hip injury after 65K. But my goodness, 7:40:36 for 100K.
Amazing.
Get after it.
Right.
Greatest run ever. Greatest run ever is part of the show where we ask you to write in and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be that time you won the Revenant or that time that you hit a sign trying to break the 100K world record. It might just be a run around the block, something that's sung to you for some reason. You can send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Nicola McCarthy. Like many Kiwis, I joined the exodus to the UK a few years back and have dabbled in running here and there, but have never been close to calling myself much of a runner. Even so, as many people over here do, each year I put my name into the ballot for the London Marathon for a laugh. Do you need to put... Is that a thing? You can't just...
No, you can't just enter it.
Ah.
You get on the ballot or you be a charity runner. But you can't, it's not just you fill out the form and send it
in. Is that because it's oversubscribed or there's a time limit?
No. It's because there's just, that's the other way you can get in is qualify. But there's just so many people want to run it.
Huh. Shows what I know. Anyway, knowing that the chances of being one of the chosen few was slim to none. I did not know that. Unfortunately for my workmates, one October afternoon in 2019, their innocent ears were exposed to some choice expletives as I opened my emails to see a congratulations message confirming that I'd somehow nabbed a spot out of 84,000 applicants.
There you go.
Crivens. I'm a bit of a perfectionist and not a great loser at the best of times, so if I was going to run this thing, I sure as hell was going to do it well. I dived headfirst into training and gave myself a lofty goal time, especially considering I hadn't run anything longer than a 10-kilometre before. I battled dark nights, adverse weather and niggly injuries throughout the dismal UK winter. A group of mates from home set up the Antipodean East London running crew, who were all keen listeners of the show. Oh, that's kind. And love a flat white post run. Over time, they wore me down and convinced me to join them on runs, which I'm pretty sure was also part of their plan to up their diversity points with a female member. Wow. I know we'll get a girl. Then came March, when the proverbial shit hit the fan. The race was postponed to October and all bets were suddenly off. Training was put on the back burner while lockdown was in full force. There were fierce debates on whether the race could and would go ahead in October before news came in, like so many other races, that it would be deferred to next year. But there would be a virtual version. I thought this was my out for another year, but one night the rosé got the better of me and the allure of getting my first running medal sucked me in. The days leading up to the virtual marathon were just what you wanted. Overcast, no wind and dry. This is London we're talking about though, so of course it rained steadily the night before and the day of the marathon. My boyfriend Nick had designed an 8.5-kilometre loop and had roped in support runners with the promise of beer and pizza at the end. Soon after 10 a.m. we set off, a class ultra runner, a Bob Graham finisher, a cross-code natural athlete and me, feeling pretty confused how it ended up in such stellar company. As we rounded the corner into Victoria Park, we were greeted by a mass of people all out with their race bibs on, slogging away at their self-designed marathon routes. London transformed from somewhere where people generally wouldn't say hello or make eye contact if their life depended on it, to a continuous stream of greetings, encouragement and cheering from other runners, passers-by and supporters with makeshift aid stations dotted around the pavement. We picked up Alison as we came down the straight, who unbeknownst to me at the time had finished a successful FKT smog Graham attempt before looping back to finish lap one. On We Trudge, I feel that's probably an in-joke.
No, yeah, the Smog Graham. It's a London thing.
Oh, another thing I didn't know. I'm all about injuries. So, on we trudged, loop after loop in the rain, picking up more mates who'd braved the elements to support me while others peeled off for the warmth of home after the loop was up. We continued on with Mitchie being an absolute legend, clearing the aggressive geese off the path and doing the better half of a full marathon with me on his own training plan, was an easy 5K. Nick racing ahead to get the emergency pickle juice to help with cramping toes and the calming tunes of Dan coaching me through the last 5K and helping me count down the milestones to home. As I rounded the last corner, with the warmth of home in sight, the worst possible thing happened. My official marathon app said I'd just finished, but Strava had other thoughts. There was no way I was going to deny myself the glory of hitting a marathon on Strava, and because if it isn't on Strava, it didn't count, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So off I went for another length of the road before finishing and being presented with a homemade medal in an impromptu ceremony. This certainly wasn't the race I'd signed up for, but in the end, it was still London's great race, and in my books, more special than if the marathon had gone ahead as usual. I got to run with a bloody great group of people who I felt privileged to call my mates.
Fantastic.
Fan-bloody-tastic.
Thank you so much. And if you want to read the full version of Nicola's account, including a shout-out to all the people in the East London running crew, have a look at it on our website. And I know that heaps of you go there and have a look at our website and read the greatest ones ever. And you can read Nicola's one there. Thank you so much.
Sounds like a garage radio, like a pirate radio station.
East London running crew.
Hard out.
Mm.
On to the sole member of the Wanaka Birmingham running crew,
yes. Ian Evans.
So Ian is, I first met Ian 2 years ago, 2019, when he came up with Steve Blackburn and Vera Alvesh in the back of the car as this sort of smiley, cheery, very earnest man who then proceeded to murder the Riverhead backyard relapse with incredibly consistent times until his stomach got to the better of him, and then he came back for Biggs last year and same thing happened, and he's 3 attempts at the Revenant. This year he was the sole finisher. He lives in Wanaka with his fiance and his puppy dog. He's a father-to-be. And a man who exudes positivity. It seems like he's got his priorities bang on in the right place and has a really refreshing and enlivening view into the sport that we all love. So without further delay, here is the mighty Ian Evans.
Dirtchurch Radio.
Okay, from Wanaka, we've got a real treat this week. We're speaking with Ian Evans. Kia ora, Ian, and thank you for coming on Dirtchurch Radio. How are you going?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Well, first of all, I just want to say, woo, congratulations, yeah, man. Far out.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I mean, for those people who don't know, what Eugene is congratulating Ian on is completion of The Revenant. 3 years, 3 attempts, and this year got the W.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing effort. I mean, throwing it on its head, because we were before we came on, we talked about how we do it sort of the opposite way. But I mean, let's launch into it. I mean, how are you feeling now? How's the body holding up? Are you recovered or recovering?
Well, the body's actually held up really well. I'm super stoked as to how the body's held up. I'm still tired, and I think I could sleep for about a month. But that's typically what happens, I guess, if you lose a couple of nights sleep. The biggest questions most people have asked have been about my feet, because they've seen all sorts of
photos
and videos. Horror story, yeah. Soggy, wrinkly feet. But that's just like being in a bath for 60 hours. They do look a little soggy. But actually, they healed really, really well. I only really got one main blister and a couple of little ones, and everything else was pretty good. So yeah, body wise I'm holding up really well, and then just trying to process everything. So a week later now, but still a lot to think about.
And you were back at work as you know the race finished, and then you sort of went home and got some sleep, and you're back at work the next day, weren't you?
Not quite the next day. I mow lawns, and The weather gods actually gave me an extra couple of days off because it rained in Wanaka on Monday and Tuesday. So I had 4 days off, which was definitely not a bad thing because I probably would have been tempted to go back into work. But I went back on Wednesday and it's quite nice for a bit of active recovery. Wow. Just kind of move around actually. So,
And what about just the sort of taking in what you've achieved, you know, Schindler, Watson, Collins, now Evans. You know, how does that sound?
Right, it's a strong name, isn't it? A strong name, three names there that's before me. It's just been so overwhelming. And the amount of messages and support that I've had throughout the whole process is just mind-blowing, really. So it's taken a lot to sink in. But, I mean, it's 3 years in the making and people have known kind of what it has meant to me to try and get over that finish line. Just trying to, do due cause and thank everybody is taking its time because, some of the messages I've received from all around the world from people following it has just been absolutely fantastic.
I'm not surprised because when we had Scott on, you know, when he was talking about the Revenant, he was very clear from the start that he was really purposefully making it as difficult as possible. And he didn't expect, he was kind of pleased. He didn't expect people to finish that first year and indeed no one finished that first year. And every year since it's that, I don't know if it's a New Zealand thing or the ultra sort of scene thing, people have kind of come back and had a crack at it. But I mean, it's a difficult, difficult race, right? It doesn't even you can't even, can you call it a race? It's something you survive?
No, it's probably not quite a race because, I mean, take last year, for example. There was not a winner, but there were three winners. There were three people that completed the Revenant course. So it's not your stereotypical race. No, you definitely try to survive it and try to complete it. And that's part of the game. I mean, I love a game and I love a challenge. So there's always something slightly different every year to kind of throw into the mix and a little bit to puzzles to work out. So that's all part of the challenge. But definitely it's not easy. I mean, take this year. The hardest thing I think for most people was the heat. Just absolutely sapped most people.
If people are tuning in, they're not familiar with the Revenant, it's in the – talk us through it.
So it's based on the Blackmore Station down in Welcome Rock, which in Garson, which is just about half an hour south of Queenstown. The premise is it's 4 loops. Each loop is approximately 50 kilometres with about 4,000 metres of vert. And you have to go and collect checkpoints. So there's 14 checkpoints to collect on a loop. And then each loop you alternate directions. So the overall cutoff for the whole race is 60 hours, but there's a 30-hour for 2 loops, 45 for 3 loops, and then 60 hours for the full 4 loops.
Wow. So it's that classic. So it's 15 hours a loop, essentially.
Yeah. But the nice thing is they give you 30 hours for the first 2 loops, and that's kind of Scott's and Tom's way of letting people get onto that second loop because they're fully aware that, especially if it's your first time, trying to go and locate these checkpoints on the first loop might take you longer than 15 hours. So and it gives everybody that opportunity to complete a first loop and get onto the second loop. And then even if you make the second loop out of time, they're still they love you to be out there, so they just want you to go and explore and have fun in the terrain, so you can actually be a little bit longer, but of course you're not going to be able to continue into the race onto the third loop if you don't make that 30-hour cutoff.
And it strikes me as one of those races where, that unlike, a traditional sort of shorter distance race where it can be quite an individual, sort of endeavor, there is, you get people teaming up, and also the group as a whole, there was sort of an elected representative, and that was you this year. Can you talk us through that?
Yes, that was. I was nominated for that one. I think that was almost by default because I think having been there all 3 years and so the first 2 years and probably getting the furthest without completing it and still being there on the third year, my name was put forward for that. Thankfully, it didn't involve too much. It was just selecting an envelope which dictated which direction we started the first loop. Right. But there's very much kind of a family feel because everybody's, I mean, as you suggested, it's not an easy event at all. It's pretty hard, grueling work. And it really helps when you team up with people just for the company. Misery loves company, doesn't it?
Misery, well, it is, you know, problem shared is a problem halved, right? But, and this year it was different as well, again, because the other 2 years we've had quite a strong international showing of, you know, these sort of hard-bitten people from around the world. And this year, with how it stands, it was an all Aotearoa affair. Well, you know, obviously you're from the UK, but, you know, people who were here at the time.
Based here. Yeah, we're very fortunate to actually be able to have events like this at the moment. So I don't think any of us were taking that for granted. I've got a lot of family back home and they're definitely not in a position where they're going to be running around for 60 hours. So you're definitely very fortunate to be in that position.
Mm. Hey, Ian, can you take us back a bit to, do you remember when you first heard about this race and what on earth made you think, yep, I'm in?
I do, and it does seem quite bizarre, really. It's actually right up my wheelhouse because it's a long race. I love long time out in the outdoors, especially in the mountains. And then this was advertised as an ultra adventure run. So, especially with the navigation aspect of it. I grew up, my dad's definitely very strong with his navigation and he used to do a lot of orienteering as a child and just time in the mountains. So this kind of really interested me straight from the off. And actually the whole thought of, it's not going to be completable and the links to the resemblance to the Barclay Marathons, which fascinates me as well. I just thought it'd be a good game and I didn't have any idea if I was capable of doing it beforehand. And I remember standing on that first start line feeling really out of place. And there's a lot of kind of big names and international names and these people that are in these kind of really high-end careers. Like, yeah, you've got your SAS and you've got other military personnel and people have done a lot of adventure racing. And I hadn't even completed a 100-miler at that point on the first year. So I definitely felt very out of place, but it wasn't long until the kind of we started and everything falls into place. And it's just, you've got so much time. So actually in the first loop, you try to team up with people and you just keep moving and suddenly you just settle into a rhythm. Mm. And it's just like being outdoors. It's just like going for a play in the mountains with a map and a compass, just in a little bit more of a structured format, I guess.
You say, you know, you hadn't completed a 100-mile. Not that that's anything to sort of, you don't have to have done a 100-mile to complete an event like this. But, Ian, what is your background? I mean, I just want to start. How long have you been in New Zealand? What brought you to New Zealand in the first place?
So I've been in New Zealand now coming up to 4 years. To cut a very long story short, I used to work in the States in America, and I tried to apply for a visa there, and that all fell through. So I kind of wallowed in self-pity in the French Alps for a season, and then worked a bit back in the UK to save money. And I'd always wanted to come down to New Zealand, so I booked a flight, and down I came. And my initial plan was to do the traditional working holiday visa, 12 months, travel both islands, tick all the boxes and move on. And I headed down to the South Island in Christchurch because I knew that's kind of the mountains was where I wanted to be. It's more me. Bought a car and then 3 days later drove down the hill into Wanaka on my way to Queenstown. But as I drove into Wanaka and went, nope, this'll do. to be honest, I've never left since.
Wow.
I absolutely love it down here. And it's a great base. I mean, you can get over to the West Coast, you can get up to Arthur's Pass, over to Dunedin, down to Fiordland. It's just a great location, and there's the community here, very like-minded people, and yeah, I haven't left. So my idea of travelling around the whole of New Zealand, I've been to the North Island twice, and that was to run round in circles in your bed.
Oh, you've seen the best of the North Island, don't worry, mate.
I've seen the best of it very well, very intimately.
That's quite a juxtaposition, isn't it? Like Wanaka, you know, and Riverhead.
Yeah, but I've had some really good times in Riverhead, so.
Absolutely you have, and yeah.
So had you sort of, you mentioned you spent a lot of time in the mountains as a kid, so is that right? Did I hear that right?
Yep.
So that's how did that come about? What was that sort of?
Yeah, so my dad's very outdoorsy, and like family holidays, we always used to go camping, and we used to do everything together. The first day was typically we'd go for a walk. So there's my brother, my mum and my dad, and I, and we'd go for a potter around, and then mum and my brother were typically content of that was their fix, and they love the mountains, but they're actually quite happy to look at them from behind a coffee shop window and enjoy them, whereas my dad and I would then go and disappear off all day and whatever weather, and we'll come back in for dinner.
So
that was camping holidays as a kid growing up, and then my dad's very active in all sorts of communities, so he used to do a lot of scouting and orienteering, and navigation was definitely kind of one of his fortes. Whenever he used to go out, no matter who we went with, he was the sort of person that would be just naturally leading a group, whether we chose to or not. So I was definitely kind of surrounded by that as a kid, and he just loves getting out into the hills. Before I came actually to New Zealand, we backpacked the Cape Wrath trail, which is now an ultra, over many days, but that's in the top of Scotland, and we just spent 15 days walking through the Scottish Highlands together.
Wow.
So it's not quite as fast as it used to be, but any time spent out in the mountains is a good time for him. So
I guess that's the goal, isn't it? Right through the lifespan, to just continue to keep moving.
Enjoy the outdoors and
continue. What does he make of, I mean, there's being outside and then there's being outside, right? Like, what does he make of the fact that you've gone and you're like, hey, Dad, I'm going to go run around in circles for, 180 kilometres. Or, hey, Dad, I'm going to go do this thing in Garston. What does he make of that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their certain things that they like to do, and it's not necessarily everybody else's cup of tea, but I mean, he used to do long distance walks, so he wasn't a stranger. He used to do 70-mile walks and big organized events like that, and in fact he was the sort of person that if there was a 50-mile walk, him and his friend would go and walk it in reverse to the start line and then go and do the event. So he's not a runner, or wasn't particularly a runner, but he can definitely relate to how kind of finding the joy that I get into it. So it might not be his cup of tea to run around in circles, but definitely I think just the love for being outside and all part of the games and the playing and the strategy parts of it, I think he can definitely get on board with.
Yeah. And when did running or racing become a thing for you?
But that's an interesting question, because growing up, I would have said that I really disliked running just a pure form. Like, I would run all day. Give me a ball, I would run all day. I was the sort of kid that I just wouldn't stop. I feel sorry for my parents that way, to keep me entertained. But I would play. I'd do every school sport team. Rugby, basketball, orienteering. We'd play football on a Saturday morning. But it wasn't really until I was working in an outdoor retail shop in the UK, and some of my friends were doing a trail event. And one of my colleagues and close friends, Hugh, he's like, "Oh, Ian, you're a fit lad. You might as well give it a nudge." And I was like, "Man, not really my thing." And he's like, "Oh, I should go. You know, the mountains." And it was a trail race in Snowdonia in North Wales, and it was called the Welsh 1000s. And I was just looking, actually, it was about 5.5 years ago. So not actually that long ago.
No.
And the mountains, I'd spent a lot of time hiking with the family as we're growing up. So I knew the mountains. So I was like, what's the worst that can happen? So I signed up, probably had the most pain in my quads ever. It's about a 35K race with about 5,000 meters of vert. And you went over each, there's 5,000 meter peaks in North Wales, and you went on the top of all of them. So I went strong on the first one, and then I loved the downhills, and I absolutely shot like a bullet down the first descent, absolutely whooping and hollering, got down to the valley, and then realized that was a big mistake. All the legs seized up and had two massive climbs to go after that. And you actually finish the race on top of Snowdon, which is the highest mountain in Wales. And that's where the finish line is, so you've still got to get yourself down from the top of that. But I was hooked. I absolutely loved it. And I thought, you know what, I can go into the mountains that I have walked in and spent 2 days backpacking this, and I've just done it in 6-7 hours. Actually, there's something in this madness. So I did a couple more events then, but it wasn't really until I came to New Zealand, and it was just an excuse to explore. And I think just as a byproduct, the more and more you do it, the fitter and fitter you get, and the further and further you go. There's all these mountains here that you can see, and it's like, I'm not going to go and go overnight and backpack it, but put a lightweight pack on and just try and move as efficiently as you can in the mountains. And it's amazing how far you can, the sort of distance you can cover.
Under
your own steam. And to that, I mean, with your approach to training, I mean, do you take something like relapse, do you take a structured approach to your build-up, or is it about you just moving outside as much as possible?
Exactly the latter. Yeah, moving outside. I'm not very goal-oriented, so actually even having a race or an event lined up doesn't motivate me to get out. But I know I need to. For my mental health and just for my physical health, I know that I perform at my best when I've been outside and played outside. And I don't use a watch. I don't have Strava or anything like that. So actually, in terms of training, if you want to go for the actual kind of specific training where it's got to be specific and measurable and progressive, I train very little, but I exercise a lot.
And you're active. You're physically active with your job too, aren't you? So
exactly, absolutely. So yeah. So pushing a mirror around all day, every day, definitely gets those kind of almost the base miles. But I've got a background in kind of sport development and physical education. That was my degree, so I'm very aware of what I'm supposed to be doing. despite being reluctant to try and factor in hill repeats and tempo sessions, etc. But trying to factor into if it's a fun event or fun way to get in the mountains, that's often how my training looks. And I use an excuse. I run with a few lads on once a week, and we use that one session. Then if that was your one run a week, you'd be content. And we take it in turns to lead it, and you often end up doing something that you don't necessarily would do yourself. So we might do repeats of certain distances, or we might do a 6-hour mountain mission, whatever that is. But it's that one session a week that if that was your only session, it's a good session to have.
Right. What a cool idea.
That's a really intuitive way to approach it. And I think something that in today's, I am, probably look at Strava a bit too much sometimes and get a bit caught up in the numbers and stuff. I find that surprising in the sense that, you know, the first relapse and bigs, just how consistent your lap times were. Under a minute until things went south for you. It was well under a minute between your slowest and your fastest lap.
Yeah, but that's where the event becomes a game. And I love the strategy and the play with the game. And there's kind of that, like, one-off session, like a one-off event. I think that's, I probably, a different side of me comes out.
Right.
I really struggle to be bound by watch because I'm always looking at it. I love numbers. And if they're there on my wrist, I look at them. and I analyze them, and I should be running this pace, or I've done this before at this time, and it just kind of absorbs all my attention and focus, and I just don't enjoy when I'm out there. So actually I made a conscious decision last year to just get rid of the watch, and it's been so much better ever since. Because just running on its own is not enough for me. I think I need the kind of bigger picture with it. So actually not having a watch kind of frees me to that.
How brilliant.
That's admirable. Like someone we know, Sean, who doesn't, I think his Casio is still not run out of battery, right? Were you taking visual cues then? So you obviously had a watch on because you've got that metric of an hour. Would you take visual cues to inform your pace? Like I passed that stump.
Riverhead is the one exception where I actually put a watch on. You have to. Just because, it is so much easier to see how you're tracking.
Yeah.
And because you're bound by the hour.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
So if we back up a little bit, and the kid who grew up in the mountains and orienteering and stuff, I get that you would love Revenant. Somebody who loves that side of it and eschews kind of, or gets away from time, what on earth made you sign up for Relapse? What was it about that made you love it?
Yeah, it's so different, isn't it? I think that must be the game aspect. Any time that there's some sort of game, I'm in. So if there's some sort of party, even if it's a kids' party or whatever, and people are playing, I want involved. I love it. I just love to play. And I think that's probably the way that my training goes best, is just through play, through the spontaneity of it. Relapse is a challenge. And it's a game that's beaten me twice, which is fascinating. And I think I've cracked why. But it's one of those... remember those old games that you used to play, like Snake on the phone? If you ever played Snake 2, and you could get your top score, and the only way you could do that was to go the really boring way, and you just go round in a circle, and you just collect it slowly, 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 surely. And it would take you ages, and finally you'd be getting close to breaking your top score, and something would happen. And that's, to me, kind of like what relapses, because you could just go out and just go trigger happy at the start and go and have some fun, and you're not going to last very long. But if you want to go in for the long run, you have to be so calculated and systematic through the whole process. It's fascinating. So nutrition's got me twice, and I genuinely believe it's because I fell victim to trying to do what other people do.
Right.
I honestly think I just ate too much. Because if I go out on a big mountain mission for 8, 9, 10, 12 hours here, I don't actually eat that much. But whereas at Relapse, you've got the opportunity to eat every hour. So every hour I was like, if I'm going to be going deep into this, I need to be getting the calories in. And I think I just ate too much. And my stomach was not used to processing it.
Right. Because you were eating... I mean, I wasn't there for very long, but at Biggs you were eating on the way in.
Yeah.
That was your thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that's a very efficient way of eating. Yeah. I think I just did it too much.
Too much, right.
So, but the problem is you can't really test that until you try it again and go for 20, 25, 30 hours or whatever it may be.
And I guess for you as well, you know, you expressed at the start, you know, your admiration for Barclay Marathons. And I'm pretty sure, you know, well, hopefully when, you know, Barclay's back on again and if we get a golden ticket, you know, that'll be a pretty big incentive, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the reasons the initial...
Oh, no, sorry, you have to ring... You have to then go and win Biggs and then get into Barclay.
Yes, I know, yeah. But, yeah, minor details.
It's all part of the game, I guess.
It's all part of the game.
And, I mean, you've really, you know, this is... For the man who drove into Wanaka going, right, this will be the, you know, this is a good base. I mean, you really are putting down roots amongst the mountains, aren't you? You've got some pretty big life changes ahead of you this year, hey?
Yeah, we've got some very, very, very exciting life changes. My fiance and I, Jane, we are expecting a little girl in a few weeks, end of February.
Wow.
So, yeah, we are so, so, so excited about that.
That's so great. And congratulations, yeah, you guys.
Thank you very much. We're over the moon. So then the games really begin.
Look, I mean, and you know, I'm sure everyone's told that, oh, you're 60 years at Rivendell, but, you know, sleep deprivation. But it is. It's a, you know, it's a constant thing, eh? It's a,
absolutely.
Another little,
yeah,
person to look up.
Constant joy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you guys got engaged recently as well, quite spectacularly.
We did. We did. We also did it up at Welcome Rock, not during the Revenant. Jane actually got me a night at one of the huts for my birthday back last year, which we booked for over Christmas. And yeah, so we went up and stayed a night in the hut Christmas, and the night before was absolutely freezing. It was sleeting down, and it was pretty miserable. But we woke up in the morning, and I couldn't have planned it any better. The weather gods played ball. We were above the clouds. The sun was shining. It was freezing, and Jane was not best amused at being made to get up for the sunrise at just before 6 o'clock in the morning. But we got up and were wrapped in blankets, and yeah, made it up to her with a cup of coffee and a ring. So,
Nice
way to finish off the year and to start this year.
So. Yeah. And Jane was there for you for Revenant this year, as support crew again.
She's been there every step of the way. It's been said many a time on this podcast before, but sometimes it's easy to be the runner. It's actually quite difficult to be the support person. I'm exceptionally grateful for her, because she's been there every single one of the years, not knowing where I am, pacing around and with our dog Poppy. I think she was really grateful this year. There was a lot of people around, and there was a lot of good updates as to where everybody was on the course, which definitely makes life a little bit easier to not worry and stress so much.
And I remember, I mean, I think the first time we were ever sort of, I mean, we'd met episodically over the however many, the 26, 27, 28 hours you were running. But one of the first things you asked me is, can you rip me up the hill? Up to the trig point where there's reception, because I want to call my partner. And then that's like, you were like, please, can you? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I was waiting, sort of, because you were so even. You just didn't, no affect change, no anything. And I was waiting, driving up the hill, going, oh, he's probably going to say, how upset? No, nothing, just the same. Yeah. And super stoked to call, you know, call your partner. And it's just amazing. But, I mean, apart from, you know, you're going to have the change of parent, change your life of parenthood this year. Have you planned anything aside from that and running? Do you have any? Are you looking ahead already, or are you just kind of go with the flow for the moment?
I definitely go with the flow. And first and biggest priority and the biggest excitement for this whole year is just seeing this little joy, this little miss come into the world. And running will figure itself out. Absolutely. So I have no idea how we're going to be feeling, how sleep deprived, what energy level we're going to be. But one thing I know is that we both need time outdoors. It kind of fills our cups. So hopefully we'll be able to take the little miss out with us. And then if running and events seem to fall into place, then they do. If they don't, then that's absolutely fine. We'll have plenty of time to adventure outside. And we've got a lot of local events here. Terry and the Highland events. So there's Ultra Easy and Mount Difficulty and Northburn. So if nothing else, a lot of our friends are all doing events, so we'll come along and support. And if it means that if anything falls into place that I can run, then that's great. But if it isn't, then that doesn't bother me either. There's so much to do down here. I'm sure I'll be back on the event scene at some stage, sooner or later.
And including, I mean, you've had a hand in planning this new sort of, this new big mountain ultra that Malcolm Law is putting together, the Wild. Tell us about that.
That's going to be great. I mean, if you love mountains, and it's just going to be such a spectacular event. I mean, it's going to be, for the 100 mile, it's going to be one big loop through the mountain. So you're not going to have to retrace your steps one little bit. So you can just imagine down in the Queenstown Lakes district here, how far, well, how much you could cover in 100 miles in the mountains. So it's not going to be easy. Absolutely not. It's going to be a challenging 100 miles, but you are going to step foot in some of the world's most spectacular scenery. I definitely recommend, even though with the shorter events, they're still going to be over some of the most phenomenal mountains with the views, and it'll be a good place to come down and support and just enjoy kind of the hospitality down here.
Well, I mean, even, you know, you think, I was watching Barrett Hocking's Instagram today about Ultra Easy, which seems like, you know, you could take Terry to court about perjury on that one, you know. It looks so, if the race that you have in your backyard is called the Ultra Easy, it looks really, really difficult. I can't imagine.
Classic Kiwi understatement.
Yeah, absolutely. It strikes me that mountains seem to be something that I really like it when I get the opportunity to go into the hills and the mountains, but it seems to be that mountains are either something that's sort of born, you're born with it in your blood. Would you agree with that?
Possibly. I mean, what do they say? You're either a mountain person, a river rat, or a desert dweller, or something like along those lines. Mountains is my soul. I can go to the ocean and I appreciate it, but it doesn't bother me to leave it, and I have no need to get out in the sea. Whereas I know I've got friends that are surfers, and actually their lust and desire to get out into the ocean is what kind of gets them out of bed. So I think whatever it is that excites you, then try and make that a possibility. And I've known for years now that mountains are what really excites my soul. I grew up in Birmingham, which is a big city in the middle of the UK, about as far away from the mountains as you can. So our holidays were always getting in the car and driving for 3 or 4 hours to get to the mountains. So it's actually nice to be sat at home looking out and seeing all the mountains all around me. So
it's quite a juxtaposition, isn't it? I mean, like Birmingham, and I know you know it's not, I'm sure, obviously it's 2021, it's not like 1930s Peaky Blinder post-industrial or industrial dystopia, but it, you know, it's such a sort of a beating heartbeat, a metropolis, and then going out into the hills, that must have been quite a juxtaposition, hey?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, black and white, completely different. So my friends from back in Birmingham just can't quite comprehend. And we are very fortunate definitely to be in Wanaka. I mean, it's a choice. Sometimes it's definitely not easy. It is kind of like my paradise.
Mm. And there's an instance, isn't it? I mean, I went for a run yesterday, actually, and it was, you know, I'm a coastal guy. I like the, you know, and from the first foot I stepped out the door of where I was, I saw one other person the whole run. Do you know, and I was gone for hours and hours. And I feel quite used to that, you know, because growing up in Aotearoa, we're so lucky. You know, we've got all this sort of abundance of space and not very many people live here. But when you do, when you think about, like, you mentioned somewhere like Birmingham or, you know, London or Swansea or somewhere like that, they're just such huge population centres.
Oh, absolutely massive. I think Birmingham's got a population of 1 million people. It's very hard to get that solitude that you can so easily, as you said, that you got it just this weekend. Mm. It doesn't take long to actually, down here in New Zealand, to get away from, not necessarily that you're trying to escape people, but it's nice to just kind of feel that freedom and that solitude. It's quite a liberating thing. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I mean, and I don't know if you've answered this question, but speaking of solitude, I mean, thinking back to last weekend with The Revenant, you were by yourself for that entire fourth loop.
Mm-hmm.
How, I mean, was that, did it have a different quality, or was it all part of the game? You're out and you're playing this game by yourself, or was it, did you feel pressure to complete it, or was it just, did it come, I'm not going to say easily, but did it feel, did it click into place, or was it a battle?
Yeah, I think I was lucky last week. Everything seemed to fall into place. And because of where I am and what I've done here in Wanaka in the mountains and the way I've grown up, my dad always liked to get off the beaten path. I'm used to being out on my own. So actually running for hours on my own doesn't bother me day or night. I actually love it. Absolutely love it. So there was the part of that excitement. And there was never really a stage where I gave myself enough of a buffer in the first couple of loops, so I wasn't pressured for time. So I always knew that I had a little bit of a margin for error. And I took a little bit of a sleep on the fourth loop because I was really suffering from sleep deprivation. And when I woke up, I wasn't quite sure how long I'd slept for because you're not allowed watches. But turns out actually it wasn't too bad and I was still within, had plenty of time to carry on the loop. But that night between, from when I set off at 11 o'clock on the fourth loop and in the evening till until about 7:30, I didn't see or hear a single soul.
Wow.
On the course. And that's part of the charm and the beauty of the Revenant, because they want it to be a self-supported race and they want you to feel like you are on your own. And as it happens, I was just the only one in that loop. But if there'd been a couple of us in that we stuck together, we would very much have just felt that, like, it's just us against the event.
The weather had taken a turn at that point. Is that right? Was it that night?
It had indeed. So actually I woke up from my nap to rain on my face. And it was a pretty cold, so everything had seized up because it definitely got a bit chilly at 5-6 o'clock in the morning. So I put all my layers on and kind of started walking just to warm myself back up. And the wind was howling overnight. And that in itself is quite atmospheric. There's something quite... it's quite cool about being up on a mountaintop and the wind is howling and, you know, you've got your headlamp and all you've got is the bulb of your headlamp and you're just going through the motions and, yeah, it's quite exciting, really.
It's amazing that you're not allowed any form of timepiece. I would have been scared that I would have slept for, like, you know, I'll lay down and have a nap. Not that I would have made it to the fourth. How long have I been asleep for? 3 days, Matt. You know,
everyone's
there
gone
is that
home.
Danger. Yeah.
In the tussocks. Yeah. Oh, but
there are watches within some of the checkpoints.
Right.
So you do have access to the time whilst you're on course. So it's a shared time. So there's probably four or five of the checkpoints that have a watch in. So I knew, so from tracking, I got to one checkpoint and it was about 3:10 and I wanted to aim to get to the next checkpoint that had a watch in it, which was about three or four checkpoints further on, by around about 5-6 o'clock in the morning. And because I took the nap, when I got there, it was about 6:10. So I knew I was still tracking okay, and I hadn't slept for 12 hours or a whole day.
I've missed 24 hours. And I mean, as much as you knew you had time up your sleeve and stuff, there must still be a little bit in the back of your mind of, you know, I've still got to do the job. So when was the point when you realised I've done it?
Yeah, good question. I was confident I had the time from about, so on the last loop we went checkpoint 1 to checkpoint 14, so we went in sequential order. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to 9, I was confident that so long as I didn't make a mistake, I was capable of getting to the finishing time. Mm-hmm. I didn't let myself accept that until I got to 14, which was the last checkpoint. So I actually got asked by Mike White on between 13 and 14, and he said, "You must be tasting now. You must be getting emotional." I said, "Not until I get to 14, because there's still points where you can make a navigational error, and an hour that you've had as a buffer can disappear very, very quickly." So yeah, it wasn't until I got to 14.
Wow.
Got to 14, got there, checked all my pages just to make sure I had the right number, and I sat there and I just took a moment, because all I knew then is that I had to just walk up the ridge back up to home. That's when the emotions started to...
Because there's that great photo of you just with your poles and your arms in the air roaring. That, you know, just looked like, what was it? It was just such a raw emotion. So what was it?
Yeah. Oh, there's all of the emotions put together. It was 3 years of knowing that I could do it. There was the feeling that I actually have done it. There was just, I could see as I was coming in, everybody had to come back for it. So I silhouetted on the outline of the ridge was about 40 or 50 people, and I could hear them cheering. I was starting to get a little bit overwhelmed. It was just such a special moment in the race and in my life. My classic, whenever I saw somebody, was to give a shout out and give a whoop whoop. It got to that stage where I knew they could hear me, and the best I could muster was just one giant roar and let them know that I was coming.
And how far is it from the 14th checkpoint back to base?
It's probably only about a kilometre. The crow flies, but it's just all uphill up a ridge.
Yeah.
So of course it probably takes you.
Of course it is.
And you've been up at that point for over 50 hours.
Yeah. We'll just give you a nice gentle downhill to the finish. Nope.
No. You still got to work for it.
It's like an Escher painting, that whole thing, isn't it? You sort of go uphill and then find yourself going uphill.
And you kind of touched on that, the disappointment and the heartbreak of those first 2 years. You know, year one, you're doing so well and you take a tumble and then the second year, just not being able to find that checkpoint, it must have just felt cursed for you.
Yeah, they're all part of the learning points of the game. The first year I was really disheartened by it. I actually struggled quite a bit because I lost my map when I fell over. And that is just a cardinal sin.
Yeah.
I was quite embarrassed to go home and to tell my dad, I'm sorry, I actually lost my map. It's not the sort of thing that you should be doing when you're out navigating in the hills.
What did I tell you when you were five? Yeah.
Exactly. So I was really, I was disappointed because I felt like I wasn't even close to doing my best on the first year. And I apologized to Scott when I came in saying, I know that this course is a lot more doable than we've made it look. And then the second year proved that with Louis and Angus and Sean doing it. I was gutted that I couldn't be with them on that year with my name with them. But it was one of those that I went out too hard in the first loop. So I suffered and struggled through the second loop, and I just didn't give myself enough of a buffer. So when it came to that third loop and I was getting sleep deprived, I didn't have time to take a nap. So I tried to shortcut it, tried to go to a different way to this checkpoint, just couldn't find it, which was frustrating, but I knew all the reasons for it. And I think that was made it easier to take. And it just meant that coming into this year, I was 100% confident that I had the ability to complete it. Whether it happened this year or not was not necessarily the point, but I knew that at some stage I had the ability to complete it. And I think that served me well this year, because when you remove any doubt that you can do it, then there's that barrier is removed straight away. So you just keep going then.
So you'd managed to turn those negatives into lessons, really, and to reinforce to you that you could do it.
Yeah.
You didn't dwell on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess with those sort of nature of the events, it was actually nice to get to a finish line, because with Riverhead and the Revenant, I struggled to get to a finish line recently.
Well, I mean, you could argue that there is a finish line, but it's determined by, you know.
Yes, but that one's determined, I guess, by other people.
You mentioned food at relapse. What did you eat during Revenant? How did you manage that?
Yeah, for me, Revenant is just like being out in the hills, so it's a lot of real food. I have started taking a few gels just because they're easy to put in throughout the course, but I had like wraps and some dried mango, some couscous, and then standard kind of sugary stuff like your lollies and your Stroop waffles, but a lot of it's all real food. And then as I say, just a couple of gels to just kind of help get things through. and some baby food. And then
the practicing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're going to be fighting for the baby food.
The baby's not putting New on weight. Why is that?
New World's always been already been giving me promotions for baby food, and it's like, I think, oh.
Sorry.
And then a couple of dehydrated meals as well, which I think is also, you've got to have some kind of substantial meals.
Did you use your jet boil?
I did use the jet boil, yes, indeed.
Of course he did.
That's probably the secret to his win. That's why I've never won Revenant. Just, so I don't have a jet boil.
It's all it takes, mate. It's all it takes. That's the difference between you getting Revenant
jet boil.
Victory.
There well, Rebecca's go. Never
jet
won it either.
Jet boil's just a name for it's a fancy name for an outdoor kit.
Stop it. It's not.
Outdoor
something special.
It's magic.
It's magic.
There'd be dragons.
That's right.
One thing I've always wondered about Revenant, and having watched videos, like particularly last year with Sean and Madeline and the crew videoing him during those breaks in between, not breaks, but, you know, when you come into the checkpoint, not checkpoint, sorry, come in between laps.
In transition.
Yeah, in transition. That's the word, thank you. See, that's another thing that it takes. How weird is it not being able to have that engagement and interaction with your crew that you might normally do?
Yeah.
It must be so hard to get used to.
Yeah. I've gotten more and more used to it. Because they are allowed to talk.
Yes.
And they're allowed to say you're looking good.
Yeah. But they're not allowed to say don't forget your poles or have you
correct. Yeah.
Or
so
that kind
not
of
allowed
stuff.
To yeah, no assistance. But I've got a little kind of a mental checklist of what I go through and what I needed to do. I actually wrote that down. And they also actually really help fill my cup. So actually having a joke and a laugh with everybody there helps to re-energize me. So it was really weird the first year. Nobody actually kind of knew what was going on, but the second year we kind of got used to it, and by this year I'd come in and then I'd be chatting to everybody and having a joke with Jane or with Jason the cameraman or whoever it is, and that kind of then just I think relaxes everybody. And so long as nobody falls into the slip of helping,
yes,
if people are just having a laugh and having a joke around, is actually that's a way to re-energize any of the competitors.
That's really lovely that during the course of the event, and I hark back to when he's got, you know, when Scott's put the watches in the and some checkpoints, seems like he's found a really nice balance there, because when he spoke to us he was like, or as I understand it, it was no talking. No, you kind of, you can give a bit of support, but there was a real kind of that emphasis to make it as difficult as possible. However, the humanity seems to have seeped in and it's found a really lovely balance.
Humanity finds a way.
That's right. Humans find a way to get
in
there.
I think you're right on that. Yeah.
Imagine how much it would suck though to get to the finish and then go, sorry, and we've been through the video footage and it turns out that someone threw you a gel. And, you caught
it. Oh, I know.
Like, oh, no.
Your missus pops a note in your pack. Love you, Ian.
Oh. No. Don't do that.
It's ridiculous to think that I even get to there, but yeah, my girls are notorious for sticking notes and love you dad or whatever. I'd get done. Gone.
Yeah, gone. He's gone.
Thanks, Lola. Thanks, No Jet Boil.
Hey, Ian, look, you are still sleep deprived and you've got to get as much sleep as you can before the end of February. So
yes,
we should
absolutely
let you get away, but you can't go without answering one question and you know it's coming. Mm-hmm. So, Ian Evans, what is your greatest run ever?
Yeah, well, I knew this one was coming, from being a weekly listener. And I'm not actually going to choose last week. Like, last week is probably one of my greatest accomplishments ever, but it's probably not my greatest run ever. Mm-hmm. That still goes to, so in Wanaka, at the head of the lake, if you were to ask a child to draw a mountain, they would draw what's called Black Peak. And it sits at the head of the mountain. It's this cone with a little bit of snow on top. And I can see it every day as I'm working the ride on. And a couple of years ago, I had a really good friend who was over from Canada. He spent 4 months and he was called Mick. And we've wanted to get to the top of this mountain for, it's ever since we both saw it. And the first time, classically, we both tried to do it after work. So we finished at 5 o'clock and then started to set up off this mountain. And that didn't quite work out. So at about 9 o'clock, we had to turn around quite a bit short of the summit. So anyway, we went a couple of weeks later to try and tick it off. And you park at the bottom of the ski field and you climb all the way up this ski hill road to the top of Treble Cone Ski Field. And then you traverse this long ridge line all the way over. And we made it all the way to Black Peak. And we had Summit Sushi. And he was an advocate for doing a summit song. And what he, it's a great idea, and yeah, I wish it was mine, but I've definitely stolen it from him. You get to the top of the summit and somebody will choose a song, and he chose a country music song because I do have a guilty pleasure for country music. And there's this funny video of us both dancing to a Sugarland It Happens song on top of Black Peak. And whenever I hear that song, it makes me smile because it took us a little bit of time to get there. It took us a couple of times. So we had the failure the first time, and we just had such good company. And we sat on the top of that mountain. We looked back at Lake Wanaka, looked back at home, and it was a beautiful day. We cruised back home, and then, yeah, we sat at the top of Treble Cone with our head torches on, looking at Wanaka and dropped in. And, yeah, it will always be one of my most favourite kind of moments. And any time I'm on my ride and I'm on look up at the mountain, I can just picture us standing goofily, trying to get the music in the right spot and doing these funky little dances as if we're underwater on the top of the mountain.
Magic.
Fantastic.
Magic. Oh,
Ian.
That's fantastic.
Go well. I mean, all the best to you and, you know, your burgeoning little whānau. And I thank you so much for coming on. It's been so nice to finally get you on and yeah, I hope you get some sleep and I hope you continue to recover. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys. Well, thank you for having me. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do on Wednesday now when this comes out for this week. I'll be a short one listening to Facebook and everyone.
No, you should. But... you should totally Monday morning quarterback it. Yeah.
No, fantastic. Thank you guys. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
Our pleasure. Cheers, thank you.
Talk about a man with his priorities in the right place.
I don't often feel kind of speechless ever anymore, and I sort of found myself feeling quite speechless when he was talking about the fact that it always strikes me, you know, every time someone says, I don't need to watch it, I do this, I don't do that, I think, oh, Raymond, take a look at yourself. Not that it's, if you want to do that, you do that,
yeah.
Do you know, but just that kind of the fact that he just goes out and does it.
Yep, he's got the courage, of his convictions. And also that just, you know, He's not worried about racing this year.
No.
He's got one priority this year.
He's got the right priority, absolutely. You know,
absolutely. I mean, how tempting would it be after winning Revenant to be right, come on, racers, yeah, come at me.
This is my year.
Yeah. So thank you, Ian. That was amazing.
Yep.
And, yeah, all the best.
Absolutely, bro. And thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com and you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher and other podcast platforms. And you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com. Also, if we're not where you want us, let us know. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. If you like what you see, spread the love. It'd be great as if many people heard the show as possible. And for that, we need your help.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We love hearing them and people love hearing them. So keep them coming, people. We have got not a backlog, but there's a few in the wings. So we will get to them, but we love seeing them come in. Thank you so much.
And head to the website. They are there unabridged and we know people do. And we love that you love them. So fantastic.
And just a quick thanks to my stuff colleague, Mike White, who has let us use the amazing pictures you can see from Revenant. And you can read his story, which we'll put in the show notes too. It really is an astonishing and beautiful read.
Thanks to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Spring Energy and Cieli. Thank you to our Patreon patrons and Wild Things. Thank you to our editor, Kieran. We've got a great guest lined up for next week, so tune in then. Ka kite.
Ka kite. Thanks, Rigby.